welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm Laura Zara-Kopinski. This week I'm sharing an interview with Jen Petro-Roy, author of two middle grade books that are a must for the shelves of classrooms and libraries, Good Enough and You Are Enough. Jen Petro-Roy is a former teen librarian, obsessive reader, and author of the middle grade novel P.S. I Miss You. Her latest books are a self-help guide called You're Enough and the novel Good Enough, which both focus on eating disorder recovery. Jen is an eating disorder survivor and advocate for recovery, and we both happen to live in the same small town. Jen Petro-Roy, welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm really excited to get to talk with you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about Good Enough first and to hear about what led you to want to write this as your next middle grade novel.
Sure. So as you mentioned, I myself am recovered from an eating disorder. I suffered from anorexia nervosa and an exercise addiction for about 10 years. My illness started when I was going away to college. So after I did recover, I kind of always wanted to write something about someone struggling with an eating disorder, recovering, you know, that whole, you know, environment, mindset. And I always thought at first that it would be, you know, maybe adults, since when I was, you know, I was struggling, I was a little older, or, you know, maybe some sort of a memoir, or maybe even young adults. I didn't really think for a while that it was something I could approach through a middle grade lens. And, you know, unfortunately, now there are a lot of, you know, middle schoolers and even younger kids who are struggling with body image and self-esteem and even eating disorders. You know, there are treatment centers dedicated toward those age groups. There are some that are, you know, solely for, you know, kids age 9 through 12, which is just so sad. And once I started kind of, you know, realizing that and thinking about how, you know, this age group is dealing with a lot of pressure, whether it's, you know, anxiety or depression or, you know, school pressure to achieve, you know, and that is all wrapped up in that, you know, anxiety about their bodies and themselves. And I really wanted to write something for that age group. So my protagonist, her name is Riley, and she's 12 years old. And kind of once I aged that down, it just really started to click that I wanted to write kind of this story about, you know, when things can start and the different insecurities and issues that can arise for, you know, a kid of that age that, you know, can lead to them, you know, worrying about their body. And it, you know, once I found that middle grade voice, it was my second middle grade, my first, my debut P.S. I Miss You came out last year. So I was enjoying writing in that middle grade voice and mindset. And once I started doing it for this story and this character, it really just kind of flowed.
Yeah, her voice, I think, is so compelling. And I kept thinking as I was reading, you know, for kids who are struggling with this, I think it's so powerful to have that story out there for them to relate to. And then I think even, you know, for kids who aren't, just to get, you know, we talk so much about windows and mirrors, to get that window into what a friend might be struggling with or someone they know might be struggling with, or just, you know, even if, you know, even as an adult reading it, even if you are not struggling to the same extent, we are all getting those diet culture messages all the time. So I just thought it was so fascinating to look at it through Riley's point of view. And, you know, as a parent reading, I kept thinking, oh my goodness, like it's sort of frightening to think about all the messages kids are getting. And even for her, she's triggered by things like her mom dieting or things that her parents say. And it's so much food for thought. Food for thought. about just the messages we're giving kids about their bodies and about food. And so I'm wondering, because I do think this is such an important read for parents and teachers, if there's any advice you would give around that, or just, I guess, your perspective on how to sort of fight against some of those messages that kids are getting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not an expert. You know, I've you know, read a lot myself. I've been through a lot. So I, and you know, like you mentioned, the windows and mirrors. And I think that was one of my goals when I was writing this. You know, because Riley, she was struggling with kind of similar things that I did. And, you know, this, when the story begins, she's entering treatment and she doesn't think she really needs it. And then throughout the course of the novel, she's realizing that, you know, she is sick, and she kind of bounces back and forth between wanting to get better and wanting not to get better, because, you know, for her, the eating disorder does a lot for her. It helps her feel better. And, you know, especially with a lot of pressure she's under in different areas, whether with family or sibling relationships or friends. And when I was sick, one of the main things that I heard my friends and my family tell me was that they just didn't understand what was in my head. Why, you know, I might have said I wanted to get better, but it was hard. They noticed that I still wasn't eating, or I said I wanted to recover, but it was just, you know, it was hard to kind of go forward. And I really wanted to be able to portray that mindset that is so hard to understand, you know, that mental struggle, why it's hard to move forward, you know, both for that, you know, Windows aspect to help other people understand what, you know, either their friends or their kids might be going through, or that, you know, mirror for, you know, someone to read it and say, okay, you know, this person, I'm going through these same thoughts. So maybe as she gets better, you know, I can do that progression too. And I've heard, you know, parents or, you know, adults who have read the book say that it made them think a lot about what their kids are, you know, going through, the pressures they might be under and stuff that, you know, they may be doing that could be, you know, not necessarily contributing, but maybe not helping in some ways. You know, and like you were saying, like, you know, it's hard when, you know, there is an authority figure around you who's on a diet, because, you know, you might think, well, if this person's on a diet, should I be on a diet? If this person's worrying about their body, should I? And like you said, you know, you have kids. I have two daughters too. So it's something that's really forefront in my mind, especially since eating disorders are, I mean, it's been proven that they're genetic. So, you know, one thing I try to do is I don't go on diets, you know, not just for myself, because I know that would be harmful for me given my background and the way my mind has worked in the past. But, you know, I don't want my daughters thinking of food as good or bad, or, you know, thinking of desserts as a treat they have to earn. It's just, you know, food is food, and it can be a celebration, or it can be just something to eat quickly because we're in a hurry, or it can be something to enjoy together. You know, we don't have a scale in our house, so we don't, you know, they don't see me weighing myself. And I make sure to talk about how, you know, if I go for a run, I feel strong, and I'm not doing it because I, you know, we ate too much the night before. So I think I tried to really get that across in the book too. Like, as, you know, Riley's going through her story, she's realizing the different things people says that, you know, can affect her, whether her mom's, you know, on a diet, or, you know, someone at school, you know, mentioned something about something that she's eating in a judgmental way. And it's so out there. I notice, you know, whether it's things that, you know, kids say, or, you know, peers, you know, at my age say, it's everywhere. So
it's everywhere. Yeah. It's one of those books where after I read it, I just kept thinking about it, and it made me like eliminate certain things from my vocabulary, or want to be really careful of, like, about what my daughter is exposed to. Like, I don't really want to participate in conversations with family members anymore about, like, oh, I'm being so good, or I'm being so bad eating this or that, or, oh, we've got to go walk this meal off, or whatever it is. Like, just, I don't know. And even being conscious of, like, every other commercial on the TV is for these diet plans, or, yeah, they're just,
it's such a way that people bond almost too. Like, like, let's bond over talking about how, you know, we look bad. And, you know, I'm hoping, you know, with this book and with, you know, You Are Enough, which is the nonfiction kind of companion that talks about, you know, situations kids could get into their life and how to handle them, that, you know, hopefully kids can learn that, you know, they don't have to bond by putting themselves down or putting other people down, that, you know, you can bond about books, or you can bond about, you know, how you're going to go play soccer together, or you can bond about how, you know, you have to do homework, or, you know, anything besides, you know, thinking that you're not enough, you know?
Yeah. And it does seem like the books are coinciding, or maybe it's been happening for a while, but all of a sudden you start to really notice a lot at once. Just a lot of conversations about body positivity, and also intuitive eating, which I think you mentioned in the book, and just trying to get away from some of the diet culture. Is that something you you researched a little bit for You Are Enough?
Oh, absolutely. So yeah, You Are Enough, it's kind of a mixture of a self-help guide and with mixed with, you know, things that I went through myself. So I talk a little bit about my own journey, and I talk about, you know, some situations that tweens or teens could get into, you know, encounter in their lives. Like, you know, why is BMI ridiculous? Or, you know, what happens if, you know, you have to buy new clothes? Or, you know, what, you know, if you're on a sports team and you have pressure to be a certain body size. And I interviewed a lot of experts. I did a lot of research for this book. So I talked to people who were in the fat acceptance movement, the body positivity movement. I talked to professionals who had, you know, who specialized in males with eating disorders or non-binary people with eating disorders, nutritionists, you know, a whole range of things. So I could make sure to make it as inclusive as possible. I mean, because, I mean, full disclosure, I am a cis white woman. And, but I wanted to make it clear through the book that, you know, anyone can get eating disorders, whether they're male, LGBTQ, you know, they can have chronic illnesses that are complicating things, or, you know, people who are not traditionally, you know, the stereotypical size that people expect people with eating disorders to be, you know, they can get eating disorders too. And I wanted to really emphasize that because, you know, body positivity is so important for kids, you know, because it really ties into their self-esteem, and kids are all different shapes and sizes, just like we're all different shapes and sizes. And I really, you know, I think it's important for you to trust your body. You know, you can eat what you want and you can end up a certain size, but that's okay. And for me in my journey, that was one of the last things that I really realized. You know, I recovered and I followed a meal plan for a while, and it took me a long time to be able to trust my body and realize that the shape my body would take when I, you know, ate what I wanted and exercised in a normal way is the way my body was supposed to be. And it might have been, you know, a little bit more than maybe my old self would have wanted, but, like, you know, that's who you are, who you're supposed to be. And I just don't want, you know, kids to spend their whole lives or, you know, 10 years like I did trying to force themselves into this shape that they're not meant to be, because it's, there's so many shapes out there. And if you're bigger or smaller, you know, whatever, that's fine. They're them, you know, they're you.
And there's so much more. Like, one of the things that struck me reading was, you know, even as an adult, I think, you know, I've spent so much time thinking about, you know, being the right size, or am I getting enough exercise? Should I eat that? Should I not eat that? Which, you know, which diet should I be on? And, you know, all the mental energy it takes, and, you know, not wanting that for kids. And also just the whole idea that we're wasting so much time thinking about all this when we could be thinking about other things.
Right. I mean, think about the energy you could be doing. Like, you know, I think about, like, you know, I spent my entire college career just worrying about stuff like this. And it was just, it was, you know, it wasted so much time. Mm-hmm. And there's a real, I can't think of the quote off the top of my head, but it's from The Beauty Myth by Naomi Wolf. And it basically comes down to, like, dieting is what the patriarchy does to keep women down, because if they're too busy worrying about their weight, you know, they can't achieve anything in life. You know, and I try to gear my books toward, you know, not just women, anyone can, you know, suffer from this as well, but it's such an interesting point, that if you're worrying about your body, you really can't accomplish much to change the world.
Really good point. And I love that, you know, after reading Riley's story and Good Enough, I think many kids will walk away wanting to think about these issues more, and get more information. So I love that then they can read the companion, You Are Enough. So I definitely think if teachers or parents or librarians are listening, I think having both copies available, for that middle grade age, I think is huge, so that they can, have access to both, especially since, you know, one of the things I like about You Are Enough is that, it's all contained in one place. They're not, you know, maybe necessarily finishing the book and then going off and searching in the vastness that is the online world, getting who knows what message. Like, it's just nice that it's sort of contained and researched I like that.
I did it in a way too. So, I mean, the chapters are short. So if the kids don't necessarily want to read a whole bunch at a time, you know, there's some chapters are just a few pages and you can read it and, you know, read what you're interested in at the moment. And if you don't have a problem with, you know, a certain issue, you don't necessarily have to read that chapter. Or, and, you know, I included things at the end, like, what are some recommended you know, books for this age group, like even, you know, middle grade books that deal with body positivity, either fiction or nonfiction. You know, what are some Instagram accounts you could find that, you know, showcase, you know, either inspirational quotes or, you know, stuff about, you know, either body positivity or just, you know, self-empowerment in general. So I tried to include a lot of resources that they could expand things to as well, which hopefully could help, you know, teachers as well, you know, when they're talking to students.
No, I think that's great. And one of the things I think I read in an interview with you is that, and I think you did this really well, you were trying to be really careful as you were writing to not accidentally like inspire someone or encourage someone to sort of mimic some of Riley's behaviors. And how did you go about that? Could you talk about that a little bit?
That was probably one of the things that was forefront in my mind when writing Good Enough is, I mean, as I'm sure a lot of people know if they've read, you know, books about people with eating disorders, is that a lot of times there are very kind of graphic, gritty details, like, you know, what this person was doing or how they were thinking about what they were eating and thinking of the calories or, you know. And I think even in like, you know, you think of like the Lifetime movie, you know, that you watch to see how far the person has fallen and, you know, what was their rock bottom. And one of the things I really wanted to do, especially since this middle grade, is I didn't really want to show the really like gritty details in the fall. And I wanted to show the rise and, you know, see her. So the book starts when Riley enters the hospital. She enters a treatment program and it's told in journal entries. So we really kind of get inside of her head. And, you know, she is, I guess, kind of at a bottom point, but she does want to get better in a lot of ways. And I kind of wanted to really include that hope because I think that's such an important trademark of middle grade is that there's always that hope and that, you know, possibility that things will turn out okay. And I think it's a little more prominent in middle grade than YA at least. And there are a lot of books out there that I read that deal with a character with an eating disorder that, you know, they really talk about a lot of their, you know, behaviors, you know, like what did they, like how much didn't they, you know, what didn't they eat or how much did they exercise or how many times did they purge, or, you know, things like that. And I really didn't want to put details like that in because, you know, for one thing, I didn't want a reader, maybe someone who was vulnerable to this, you know, reading it and being like, oh, that'd be a good idea. I could do that to lose some weight. Or I didn't want someone maybe reading it and saying, oh, I'm not as sick as this person is, so that means I shouldn't get help. So you know, there are a few dangers involved in there. So, I mean, I did mention that, you know, Riley lost weight, you know, and she, you know, ran too much and, you know, she didn't eat enough. And, but I never mentioned like, what was her weight or how long did she run or, you know, what kind of stuff did she eat? So I wanted to make sure that I had the details in there that, you know, she was, you know, in danger and she was, you know, she was sick and struggling, but not in a way that was just kind of like voyeurism almost. Like, let's see how awful this person gets. So, because that was part of her journey, you know, to be there. But I wanted to show the hope more than the, you know, just awfulness of everything.
Yeah, I think that's so important. That's an interesting way of looking at it, too, that it's sort of chronicling the rise and maybe the very beginning of the rise. Well, I also had read that you sort of turn back to some of your old journals when you were writing the book. Could you talk a little bit about sort of the writing journey behind Good Enough? And then I guess also too, like, was it hard to like tap back into that place when you were struggling with an eating disorder? Were you, I don't know, I would imagine that would be a hard place to go back to.
I think that was one of the main reasons I waited a while to write this after recovery. You know, I waited maybe a good 10 years or eight years after I, you know, said I was fully recovered. You know, there were, you know, shaky bits before that, but I wanted to wait until I was strong enough that going back kind of into a character with that mindset wouldn't, you know, trigger me or make me feel vulnerable to the you know, to having those thoughts again in a certain way. So, you know, I waited a while and it was an interesting journey kind of writing it because it was really hard to start. I think probably because I had that fear of kind of jumping back in. But once I did, it was kind of an interesting mix of, wow, I can't believe I ever thought like that. Like, I feel like I almost felt bad for myself a little bit that I had to go through that and that I kind of put myself in Riley's place and, you know, felt bad that she had to keep, had to go through that because I knew how hard it would be. And I also just, it really brought me back in a lot of ways. Like when I was describing her environment or the treatment center, and I based it a lot on, you know, feelings I had and experiences I had gone through and, you know, partially like the building I was in. And I was surprised at how vivid it all still felt, probably because it was, you know, such a formative moment in my life, but it was kind of this mixture of extreme distance and just insane immediacy. And reading the journals was similar. You know, just kind of seeing my feelings back then. And, I mean, it was hard. I cried, you know, a few times writing it, but I also, you know, Riley is her own person. You know, she has parts of me, but she's not me at the same time. So I think that that helped as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm interested too. You do, such a wonderful job capturing that middle grade voice in your writing. And I know, that you were a teen librarian before. I would love to hear about, how you got started, writing middle grade. And I'm wondering if that was inspired by all the books you were reading as a librarian.
So I've always, I mean, I was one of those kids who always said they wanted to be a writer. You know, I always wrote like little short stories or poems and fairy tales and stuff, which never were really that good. And, you know, once I got to high school and college, I stopped for a little while because, you know, I was busy in high school and then I got sick in college. So kind of went to the back burner a little bit. And then after I recovered, finished college, I went to grad school to become a librarian. Actually was a teacher briefly for a year and realized that wasn't quite for me with all the administrative stuff and went back to grad school. And I got my degree at Simmons College, which is now Simmons University in Boston.
That's where I went for my library degree too. Yay, Simmons.
And I loved it there. It was great. So I started work as in circulation. And then I went on to, you know, work in two different places as a teen and children's librarian, which I absolutely loved. You know, and I'm hoping to go back there someday. Right now I'm at home with my daughters and writing, which is also enjoyable, but I really like being a librarian. And I kind of took a little time off after my first daughter was born, and I stayed home with my daughters for a few years before going back to work part time. And while she was napping, because I didn't realize babies napped a lot, you know, once she was on a steady sleeping schedule and I was, you know, up to date on my sleep, you know, while she napped during the day, I figured I'm like, I'm going to start to write something. And, I wrote a bunch of books that weren't that great until I finally, you know, I got an agent and I sold P.S. I Miss You, which is my debut that came out last year. And I think partially I did start writing middle grade because I was working with teens and middle schoolers. The libraries that I worked at, the teen population was pretty heavily in the like upper middle grade range, like sixth, seventh, eighth. Cause at least in, you know, the town where I live and you live, the teenagers are really heavily booked and scheduled. So I get a lot of older middle schoolers in the group, in the library for my program. So I got to talk to them about, you know, stuff that they were reading and that they were liking. And you know, I got the itch. And then, you know, when I was at home for a few years after that, I, you know, started writing and just kind of thinking about stuff that, you know, they like and they enjoyed and, you know, what did I enjoy and what did I love reading. And, you know, I think for me, middle grade is, or, you know, around that time, you know, third to fifth grade is where I really started like reading obsessively. I was always a reader, but like obsessively. And I think partially my mind just got stuck in that middle grade time period.
I think a lot of people would say that. Yeah, that's very cool. Well, what is your writing routine like now? And I don't know if it's top secret or not, but is there another book in the works?
So there is another book in the works, and nothing has been announced yet, but I think announcement will be forthcoming soon. So I think that's all I can officially say. But
by the time this comes, it'll be a little while before this comes out, at least a few months. So by the time it comes out, maybe there'll be news that I can link to.
Yeah, there probably should be. There will be an announcement by then. So my writing routine is a little erratic right now because I have a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old, and my 7-year-old is in school all day, but my 5-year-old is only in school for about 2.5 hours every day. So I have about 2 hours a day to work. And so I pretty much, instead of, you know, going food shopping and doing errands during that 2 hours, they go home and immediately write or do, you know, other authory, email-y things during the day. So I'm not one of those people who writes every day. I tried to do that for myself for a while, but it was a little bit too much pressure. Like it really stressed me out. I need at least a few days a week to kind of just let things percolate and settle. And so I'd say I probably write maybe about 4 days a week. And I'm usually working on one thing at a time. Unless it's two different stages of things. Like I can revise one thing while starting to write, you know, draft another thing. You know, like Good Enough and You Are Enough came out on the same day. So I was bouncing between those, and my editors were wonderful in that they usually, you know, they sent me edits on one thing while, you know, once I finished that and sent them back, they sent me, you know, edits on the other thing. So I was luckily I never had to do both exactly at the same time.
Yeah, that is amazing to have both of those come out at the same time. That is a big undertaking.
It was exciting.
Yeah.
Next year will be a game changer because my younger one is going to kindergarten, so I will have much more writing time, which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, that's a whole new ball game. Yeah, I always just think it's interesting to hear how people are making it work and carving out that writing time. Well, I always just like to end by asking what authors have been reading lately. Are there any books you'd want to recommend to listeners?
Yeah, I currently, I'm reading The Parker Inheritance by Varian Johnson, which I've been meaning to pick up for like a year now, and I finally picked it up yesterday, and I adore it so far. It is as wonderful as everyone said it was.
I love that book. Love it so much.
The West Wing is perhaps in my top 3 books of all time. So it's hitting all of my buttons. Let's see. I have also been reading, I just read an advanced copy of Ray Watson's Some Places More Than Others, which comes out, I think, this fall. And I adore her. It's her first middle grade, I think. She wrote Piecing Me Together, one of my books. And I really loved the voice in that. So those are kind of two of my...
I totally agree. Well, I was just going to say, I was such a huge fan of Piecing Me Together. I'm really excited for her next book. I bet that's going to be really good.
Yeah, it was highly recommended. And I also just did a recent Meg Cabot. Meg Cabot is one of my favorite authors of all time. Like, I've read The Princess Diaries like through maybe 3 times the entire thing. And I just recently stumbled upon The Mediator, which is one of her older series about a girl who can, you know, she's a mediator between ghosts and the spirit world. And I just went through them all, like all 7 of them in like 2 weeks, and they were so good. She's my, you know, happy, if you need to be in a good mood, read Meg Cabot.
Well, I'll link to all of those in the show notes, and to both of your books, and just congratulations on Good Enough and You Are Enough. I think, they're such important books, and I think are going to be really making a difference in kids' lives. So I hope that parents and librarians and teachers pick those up or, you know, add them to their libraries so kids could access them.
Thank you so much. I just so appreciate you and others doing podcasts like this. I love listening to them. So I'm looking forward to future ones from you.
Thank you. To learn more about Jen Petroroy, you can visit her website, jenpetroroy.com. You can also follow her on Twitter and Instagram at jpetroroy and on Facebook at jenpetroroy. For links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, you can head to my site, abookishhome.com, and there you will also find lots of kidlit and adult book recommendations. If you have not yet subscribed to A Bookish Home, please take a moment to do that in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you also have time to rate or review the show, that would be so helpful. And you can follow me on social media at A Bookish Home. Thanks for listening, and happy reading.